This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. I'm Lou Gum. With hospitals burdened nationwide under the stress of the COVID-19 pandemic, it's worth noting that where you are and the state of the medical provider infrastructure around you make a big difference in your community's experience of COVID-19. Here in Yuma, the medical infrastructure is built around one hospital, Yuma Regional Medical Center. My guest today is CEO of YRMC, Dr. Robert Trenchell. As virus numbers spike following the Thanksgiving holiday and concerns mount over what the rest of the holiday season holds, I spoke to Dr. Trenchell about the hospital's capacity now and its ability to handle an influx of new COVID-19 patients.
So, you know, we're seeing, or most people should know if they don't, that we're seeing a second surge, you know, in COVID cases, and it's significant. You know, it's a significant surge, and it's come on pretty quickly. Right now, we've got 126 COVID patients in the hospital. That compares to a peak of, I think we were at 170 at some point in late summer, late summer, I think we were at 170. So we're below where our peak was, which is good. And I'll talk about that in a little bit, too. Vented patients, we have 19 vented patients in the hospital. Total of 1,392 COVID patients have been discharged healthy from the hospital, which is the good news. The tragic news is we've had 276 deaths, so that's the tragedy of all this. And in the hospital right now, you know, as I said, we're seeing the second surge. It's significant, and it's actually exceeding the projections that we had for the for our community. You know, we had our business development team put together projections specific for Yuma based on past experiences and based on the number of tests that are being done, the percent positivity, and they go through their machinations and come up with the projections. And it, actually, the projections were exceeding those projections, which is problematic, but it's concerning to us, and we're preparing for it, obviously, because the projections show this second wave is most likely going to be worse than the first wave, I'll put it that way, in terms of number of hospitalized patients. We're projecting a peak of approximately 250 hospitalized patients. It may go more than that. It may go less than that. You know, viruses don't read books, and they don't read projections by business development folks. They kind of do what they want. But, you know, we use the best information we have at our disposal, combine that with the state's information, and come up with projections for our area. And that's what we're projecting, is that this will be worse than the first wave. So, you know, the ask really for everybody is to continue wearing masks, you know, continue social distancing, continue those safe practices.
When we spoke in the summer, one of the sort of benefits of the timing was that we didn't have this large population of winter visitors. We still aren't looking like we're going to have a large population of winter visitors even in the winter. But what's different now in terms of that and your capacity? Because back then you were able to be fairly flexible.
Yeah, we're seeing, you know, some of the winter visitors coming in. I don't know if they were here all along or if they maybe didn't go back to Canada, but we're seeing some influx of the winter population, not like we have in the past. You know, we gear up every year, as everybody knows, for the winter influx, and we brought in nurses earlier this year. We have a pretty robust seasonal program for seasonal nurses, and we've tapped into that, obviously, but we tapped into it earlier than we would have. And we're also bringing in additional agency nurses. We're bringing in additional, 21 nurses, 10 PCAs are coming in this week, more are coming in next week. We got approved from the surge line for 30 med-surg nurses and 20 ICU nurses, so those will be coming in. And we just continue to source nurses throughout the country where we can. Everybody's competing for the same resources, and that's really the issue, is competing for the nursing resources. And, you know, I have to give hats off to staff, you know, throughout the hospital, not only nursing staff but all staff. But, you know, certainly the nursing and physician staff have continued to go above and beyond, and, you know, taking on extra patients when you know, they have to, because we can't transfer them anywhere typically. Sometimes we can, but most hospitals are full in Arizona. So we have to manage what we have here with what we have.
Well, and I guess that's why I ask you about capacity, because when people see reporting that, you know, hospitals are full in Arizona or they're at 90% capacity, that may not necessarily be true in your local hospital.
That's very true. And, you know, there's a difference between, you know, you can have bed capacity, but if you don't have the nurses to care for those patients, then it's really, the bed capacity really doesn't do you much good. So, you know, we've gone to a team nursing model where our nurses work with PCAs and other professionals to really expand the number of nurses that that nurse can be responsible for. Our physicians have done the same thing with not only mid-level providers but other physicians throughout the organization. So we have a tiered approach to we're bringing in nurses from our ambulatory environment to work in the inpatient environment. If they have the skills and the ability to do that, we make sure that we've trained them and such. So it's, and we, you know, we can increase our capacity here probably another, 90 beds plus over where we are right now. And we're not at capacity right now, but we can increase it even another 90 beds over that. But we're going to need to bring the staffing in or expand the staffing that we have to care for additional personnel. And it's really a function of, you know, the acuity of the patients. You know, if you can manage, sometimes a nurse can only manage one or two patients because the acuity is so high. Sometimes, you know, they've been asked to manage six patients at a time because the acuity may be moderate to low to, you know, moderately high. So it really just depends sometimes on the acuity of the patient and the circumstances that are going on at that particular time.
On Wednesday, Governor Ducey pledged $60 million to help hospitals with staffing issues. Does YRMC, is it able to take advantage of any of those kinds of offers from the state?
Yes, we can, and we have, and we will continue to do that in the future. Part of that is through the surge line. And it's great that the money's available, but you know, a lot, you still have to have the people there to be able to fill it, and that's not always the case. But the surge line has been extraordinarily helpful for us, not only in terms of bringing in extra staff when we need it, but allowing us to transfer patients when they have the availability.
One of the things that you mentioned earlier was the number of people that have been released from the hospital. One of the perhaps good points of the data that we're seeing lately is that there do seem to be fewer deaths. Is that an endorsement of the treatments that are available? And are you satisfied with what's going on at our hospital?
Yes, I am. I'm very satisfied with what's going on at our hospital here in terms of, you know, the newest treatments that are available. We have them available to us. We have research protocols that are available that we've made available to patients. You know, in terms of the availability of newer treatments, I think that contributes, as you said, to the lower death rate. I also think people are more comfortable and know what to expect now from a treatment perspective. So I think that experience will bode well for patients in the future.
Our guest today is Dr. Robert Trenchel, CEO of Yuma Regional Medical Center. We'll have more to talk about after the break. I'm Lou Gum. This is Arizona Edition on KAWC. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Arizona Edition on KAWC. I'm Lou Gum. Our guest today is Dr. Robert Trenchel, CEO of Yuma Regional Medical Center. We've, of course, been talking about the COVID-19 pandemic and its impact on our community.
Dr. Trenchel, I want to touch on a subject that I've heard a lot of reporting about just in this last week, it feels like, and perhaps it was the Thanksgiving weekend that sort of motivated some of this reporting, but I feel like we're hearing a lot more from doctors and nurses and hospital staff about the mental stress, the ongoing stress of the pandemic just day after day for some of these nurses and doctors. How do you keep up with the mental health? What's your concern level in terms of that, in terms of your staff?
Sure. Highly concerned, you know, not because they're wobbling or not because they're, you know, not performing as they need to, but just because we're concerned for their mental health. Because it is a burden. I mean, it's a lot to be caring for these patients, you know, day after day. And, you know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. We've said that. But to actually live it and do it is, you know, is different. And it creates a lot of mental stress on the providers and the frontline caregivers to constantly have, you know, the barrage of really sick patients coming in through the door and having to care for them. Because, you know, caregivers don't, they don't let up. You know, they don't say, hey, you know, yeah, I know you're sick, but I'm going to take a break. They don't function that way. They keep going on and caring for patients, and they'll sacrifice themselves in many instances. You know, we try to prevent that by giving them breaks and, you know, making sure we have enough personnel. But again, it's just, it becomes a volume issue. And we're highly sensitive to that. We do what we can, where we can, to try and alleviate some of that mental stress. Some of the things we do is, you know, many people still have families and homes to care for and take care of, and the kids are home at school, self-learning. So we try and provide meals, transportation, anything we can do, you know, car washes, grocery delivery. I mean, whatever we can do to help, you know, alleviate some of the stress in our staff, we'll do. And we have done and will continue to do. But it still comes down to the fact that you've got a lot of sick patients and the caregivers are going to continue to care for them. And, you know, we constantly tell them. We have an organizational psychologist that's on staff here. And, you know, she works with staff individually and also in groups when that's appropriate and needed. But the mental health and the emotional health of our staff is always in the forefront of our mind.
What do you think the community could do to, I don't know, show support a little more for the hospital staff?
Yeah, you know, the support we get and we've gotten from the community has been immense, and it really gives staff a boost when they see that, when they hear that. You know, we've had, you know, people give thank you cards. We had the car parade around the hospital. That was, all that activity is such a tremendous boost for staff. You know, we had restaurants delivering food. It just, you know, it lets them know that people recognize the work they're doing, the effort they're putting in, the emotional and physical effort they're putting in. And, you know, just those words of appreciation and it goes so far. I can't even begin to tell you with staff.
I want to circle back to something you said before, and that was that a lot of the staff recruiting that you need to do is really done nationwide, and that you're competing with probably every other hospital in the country for staffing. How does the hospital go about that, and what infrastructure are you able to put in place to bring people to town?
Yeah, great question. So we, you know, because of our seasonal program, we have a really robust program to bring nurses in for the season. So we use that as the foundation, and we really just expand on that. You know, if they have friends or coworkers or others that they can bring in here along with them, we take those if they meet the criteria. We pay a premium when we have to and when we need to bring additional folks in. The bottom line, really what attracts people over and over year after year, and even the newbies coming in, is the camaraderie that they have when they come here and they work. They enjoy the work here. They enjoy the camaraderie, not only with their other nurses, but with all nodes of the organization. That goes a long way when you're in a highly stressful environment, to know that you're supported by the organization, to know that you're supported by your coworkers. And that's an environment typically that people want to go to. So that's been an advantage for us, and we market that.
President Donald Trump gets a report on state conditions for COVID, and I had a chance to look at his for Arizona this week, and one of the things that struck me was it says that given the fact that there will probably be no government action taken to in terms of closures or new regulations, that the onus on public education is now on doctors. What do you feel like the role of doctors and healthcare providers is in encouraging the public to pay attention to COVID in general?
Well, that's good. You know, I mean, the physicians know, you know, what needs to be done and whatnot. But when you don't have a consistent, you know, one voice message, it does tend to be, you know, all over the place. You know, with COVID and with infectious diseases, that shouldn't be the case, because, you know, we know the principles that we need to do to keep people safe to the extent that we can, and what individuals and groups need to do to keep those people safe. So to the extent that physicians can give advice, and they have given advice in the past, and that is a good thing. I do think, though, that, you know, if you talk to 10 different people, you're going to get 10 different opinions, right? So I think having one consistent message out there is a good thing, and I think that's the role of, I think that's partly the role of government. I think that's partly the role of local, and that's partly the role of physicians. So everybody really has to work together. I don't know that you can put the onus on one group and say, okay, that's your job now. Everybody's in this together. Everybody has to do the work.
As you look ahead to the immediate future, the days and weeks ahead, what is most concerning for you?
The biggest concern I have is is the capacity that we'll have to be able to accommodate the volume of patients that we're anticipating coming in the door. You know, we've got enough personal protective equipment for our staff. Testing reagents and materials are becoming harder to source, although we're in a good spot right now. The bed availability will, I know our bed availability will be strong. We just need to make sure that we're able to continue to recruit the nurses and the staff we need to care for those patients. You know, we may bring in additional 20 or 30 nurses, but sometimes you have 20 nurses that are out with COVID, not because they contracted it in the hospital, but because they contracted it in their social circles, and, you know, they're out on quarantine until they either test negative or, you know, they've passed a quarantine period. So a lot of it is just running to keep up with not only where you are today, but trying to, you know, get ahead to where you anticipate being in the future. But I would say staffing is my biggest concern.
And in terms of perhaps doctors being someone who can provide a good message to the public, a reiteration of what the public can do to stay safe.
Sure. Mask, wash your hands, social distance, don't gather in large groups. You know, those basic principles. I mean, they really are basic principles. And that's what we have to do. People are tired of it. I mean, I get that people are tired of it, but it doesn't mean that we can stop. We just can't.
And given all that, is there any good news?
The good news is we have a vaccine on the horizon. We anticipate getting the vaccine here by mid-January latest. And, you know, we're waiting for guidance, I believe, from the state in terms of who will be first, you know, to get those vaccines. So I think the vaccine is great news to have on the forefront. That's number one. I think the other good news is that our providers and our caregivers are much more adept at caring for patients now with COVID. They've had one round of experience, and now they're using that for round two and hopefully not a round three. But I would say those are the two biggest pieces of good news, Lou.
All right, Dr. Trenchel, anything else that you'd like to add?
Just that I'm proud of our staff. I'm so proud of how they've responded, how they continue to respond. And I just couldn't be more proud of how everybody's responding to keep our community safe and healthy.
Dr. Robert Trenchel, CEO of Yuma Regional Medical Center, thank you so much for your time, sir.
Thank you, Lou.
My thanks to Dr. Trenchel for his time. That's either the fifth or sixth time we've spoken to him on the program since the COVID-19 pandemic began. And a reminder to thank all of the doctors, nurses, orderlies, aides, maintenance workers, office staff, and many, many others we never hear about who truly are on the front lines of one of the most consequential and life-altering events of our lifetimes, and whose work only looks to get more challenging in the days and weeks ahead. That's Arizona Edition for this week. I'm Lou Gumm. Thanks for listening.